Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
We'd like to welcome Adedemola Oyekunle to the Lab Up Global Leader podcast. Adedemola, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Robert.
Great. Thank you for joining us today. I'd like to get started by introducing you to the audience. We're starting with your academic background, please.
Okay, great. My name is Adedemola Oyekunle. I'm a medical laboratory scientist. I studied in Ladoke Akintola University of Technology. That's for my college graduates. And then for master's degree, I have a master's degree in clinical chemistry and molecular diagnosis from the University of Lagos, in Lagos State, Nigeria. So that's quite a bit of that current background. You know, I've been involved with quite a number of research and all of that. So that's my current background.
Let's just hit briefly on your motivation for the med lab science. So what triggered you to select that as an undergraduate degree to start with?
Medical laboratory science is the bedrock of modern medicine. Yes, when I finished secondary school, I was looking into getting into the medical field. You know, the idea was to get into medicine, you know, because that seems to be the only medical field that was familiar to us as a day. That I have a great flair for science and, you know, research, you know, innovations and all of that. So the only thing that seems to be like more of a medical practice that was getting into medicine. So I wanted to study medicine, and upon getting to the university, I got admission into medical laboratory science. You know, for my school, if you don't get to medicine, they give you a course that's related to medicine, and I was given medical laboratory science. So my intention was to, you know, get into the second year and then do a change of course and go back to medicine. But then I get a tutorial level and I was exposed to the subject, real core subject of medical laboratory science. And I realized that medical laboratory science is more of a kind of a bedrock of medicine, the oracle of modern medicine. So having this kind of exposure, you know, with the kind of caliber of lecturers that we're having that time, I decided to stay, and I didn't have to change a course back into medicine, despite having the requirement to get back into medicine. So I proceeded with studying medical laboratory science from tutorial level, of course, till the final year. And it was a great journey all along. And, you know, while in school, I had opportunity to, you know, get involved with quite a number of societal influence activity, student representation, and all of that. So all of those experiences culminated into, you know, what I'm doing today, you know, learning about stakeholders engagement, conducting different interventions within the laboratory space, even as an undergraduate. So it's like a stepping stone to what is happening today.
Great. And then from a professional perspective, upon graduation, you would have had, I assume, some internship as well. Along with your practice. So can you take us from the internship on through the rest of your professional experiences, please?
Okay, awesome. So I finished school, that was 2014, you know, in Ladoke Akintola University of Technology. I was in Oshogbo in Osun State, Nigeria. After school, I didn't get internship immediately, you know, because of the number of graduate and limited opportunity. So I started lecturing in an high school, you know, teaching physics, chemistry, biology, and different other science courses. But I was applying to, you know, several internship positions. And lo and behold, I got internship in two places. That's a neuropsychiatric hospital and then Obafemi Awolowo University Teaching Hospital. So I decided to go for Obafemi Awolowo University Teaching Hospital. That because it has a robust opportunity to learn, you know, during the internship program with different departments under the medical laboratory science, clinical chemistry, hematology, histopathology, microbiology, majorly. So I was able to, you know, have a very great hands-on experience with automation and several other aspects of a laboratory practice. So following my internship, there's this National Youth Service Scheme that's a compulsory 1 year service to the country. And so you are posted to a different part of the country. So I was posted to Kano, that's the northern part of the country. And there, you know, I worked in a private establishment that's in a private diagnostic space that is actually, you know, quality management system compliant. There and then I was able to garner quite a lot of experience as relates to quality management system. And then, of course, good laboratory work practice. Mm-hmm. After my NYC, of course, during the NYC, but about 2 months before the end of my NYC, I started applying for jobs, you know, and I got interview opportunity with PathCare Laboratories. PathCare Laboratories is now Synlab, Nigeria, mm-hmm. you know, and I went for the interview and, you know, I skilled the preliminary phases of exams and all of that, and then the interview phase. And then I got the job the following day, and I was yet to finish my NYC. So I told them to give me a month to finish my NYC, and then I'll come to join. So I went back to Kano, and then I was done. And then I joined the PathCare Laboratories in Lagos. I was posted to the Lagos University Teaching Hospital. To a branch of the laboratory, and you know, PathCare Laboratory is an ISO certified laboratory. By that time, in the International Organization for Standardization, a certified laboratory. They received the accreditation by SANAS. Mm-hmm. You know, that was 2016. I joined 2017, so it's like it's in the ground running. At the wake of 2018, there was a need to renew that accreditation. So I was part of the team that actually worked in that lab to ensure that the lab is able to retain the accreditation they had gotten. So that was that's ISO 15189 2012. Yeah. So it's been a great opportunity for me to learn. You know, that phase was what really exposed me to the real core practice of a laboratory medicine, especially as in place to implementation of a quality management system. But then that's just one thematic area in a practice of medical laboratory. But then that experience is quite overwhelming and what is worthwhile. I was there for 2 years approximately, and then the opportunity to work at the Federal Ministry of Health came, and I got the job, and you know, I was not sure where I posted. So because I was enjoying my job in the private sector, I was skeptical about joining the public sector because there's one way or the other, my overview or my perception about the public sector in Nigeria is that people don't take work serious, you know, things are Lucy not moving as expected and all of that. So I was not called out for that. So I was oscillating between continuing the private sector or joining the public sector. But I took the bold step. I was willing to pilot. So I joined the public sector at the Federal Ministry of Health. I was posted to the Medical Laboratory Service Division. And of course, that's also the National Laboratory Technical Working Group Secretariat, you know. And joining that space, you know, at the beginning, it looks like a starting on a slow platform compared to where you're coming from. And at that point in time, I realized there's so much to do. There's so much land to cover. There's so much gap, you know, to close within the medical laboratory service practice and service delivery in the country, you know. And I was able to work with my director, you know, to do quite a lot within the space of a very, very short time. I think that speaks to my program.
Sure, just briefly, sorry to interrupt there, but just briefly, can you give me a sense of the types of activities you would have undertaken in that role at the Federal Ministry of Health? What was sort of the types of activities you would have engaged in during that window of time?
Okay, so when I joined, you know, because the division was a new division, you know, I think it was created 2 years before I joined the division, before I joined. And, you know, things were still starting very slow. So, majorly, when I got there, everything I was taught in school seems not relevant to the working space. Because one thing is, in school, most times they're not taught policy formulation, policy development, document development, guidance, document, and all of that. So getting to that space, I had to learn on the job. I had to watch what was happening. I had to, you know, ask a lot of questions. So the mandate of the Medical Laboratory Service Division is quite broad, and I'll just speak to some of them. One is to have a kind of an oversight over the laboratory services in the country, and of course, laboratory interventions at different types of the health system delivery. And we play kind of an oversight role on the laboratory intervention, and of course, on regulatory agencies that are related to regulating laboratory practice in the country. So we play some kind of an oversight role, you know, on the Medical Laboratory Science Council of Nigeria, the Forensic Science Laboratory in Oshodi, Lagos, the Federal School of Medical Laboratory Science in Jos. You know, we have a kind of an oversight role on some of their on their activities generally, and apart from that, we also, you know, initiate policy formulation, development, and ensure there's robust stakeholder engagement whenever policy are related to laboratory are supposed to be developed, and of course other guidance document relating to laboratory practice in Nigeria. And aside that, also we coordinate quality practice of a medical laboratory in Nigeria. And of course, when it comes to quality practice, don't do it alone. So we collaborate with every other ministry, department, and agencies that are relevant to laboratory practice in Nigeria. And of course, just like I said, the office also serves as a secretariat of the National Laboratory Technical Working Group. The National Laboratory Technical Working Group is a group of experts that was constituted by the Honorable Minister of Health in the wake of January 2017, you know, when there was a gap identified regarding the coordination of laboratory services and interventions in the country. So this expert group was created to, you know, advise as an advisory body to the government to guide the implementation of a policy strategic plan to advise the government on strategic intervention, strategic activities that are needed, and of course, support with implementation as the need arise. And the Medical Laboratory Service Division houses the secretariat of the expert working group for the laboratories in Nigeria. So these are some of the things we do, and of course, a lot more.
Sure, I'm certain of it. Especially in the country and the size of Nigeria, there's a lot of activities for a lot of when you discuss the amount of facilities you would have to address alone, regardless of the level of services in each facility, that's already a substantial yeah. Undertaking. So Ademola, can you guide us from there? So from that perspective, and continuing your role at the federal ministry, it seems that you also got engaged in a few other kind of more recent events around the essential diagnostics list. So for the benefit of those in the audience that are not familiar with what that is, can you please share a little bit about what is the essential diagnostics list and what's sort of the objective of creating one?
Okay. So when it comes to essential diagnostic list, guys, you know, WHO actually advise countries, you know, to come up with a list of essential diagnostics that are relevant for use in a country, and this was born out of a need to have a kind of an approach whereby the showmakers are able to decide on the kind of diagnostics to prioritize in a country. But before the creation of an essential diagnostic list, even by the WHO, that was what we call essential medicine list. And this essential medicine list tells you the kind of medicine that are essential for use in a country. So they look at it and say, okay, if you have essential medicine list and we don't have a diagnosis of particular MS, so how do you give him, how do you give medicine to what you have not diagnosed? So the idea of essential diagnostic list come on board. And WHO, you know, in 2018, published the essential diagnostic list and advised other countries to leverage on the provisions there to create their own tool. And one very key importance of this essential diagnostic list is that it has the capacity to contribute to universalized coverage, because it kind of have a kind of a distribution of a kind of diagnostic list that's supposed to be available, the kind of diagnostics are supposed to be available at each level of care. By that I mean the primary healthcare level, the secondary healthcare level, and of course the tertiary healthcare level. So for each level of care, the essential diagnostic list makes a provision for that. So that was about in 2019, you know, through the National Laboratory Technical Working Group, need to have the in-country essential diagnostic list. That discussion came up at the national TWG meeting, and WHO was willing to, you know, support the country, you know, to develop one. So at the wake of that, the Resilient and Sustainable Systems for Health grant was also running, and so the Global Fund through the Management Systems for Health also indicated interest, and so consultants were engaged to come with this the draft of the essential diagnostic list for Nigeria. So draft was in order to develop this draft. Would you mind if I take you through the process we went through to come up with that? Is that
please,
okay?
Please, that'll be great. Okay. I think given also, I just want to maybe highlight the fact that if I understand correctly, there are only two countries on the planet so far that have successfully built an essential diagnostic list, at least for the purpose of this particular exercise. And so I think that's also to be mentioned that you're second in the planet to create it. And I believe also the first on the continent.
Yes, exactly. Right. So yeah, of course, Nigeria is the first country to develop the national essential diagnostic list in Africa. That's after India and Bangladesh, you know, who have also developed theirs. So yeah, just like I said, before we went to the full process of development, we had to seek approval from the Honorable Minister of Health. We got the approval to go ahead. Of course, there was no cost implication on the government. So the approval came in expressly, and the list was developed, you know, through some of these following processes. The first was developing a data collection tool. You cannot just sit down in the office and come up with an essential diagnostic list. That's not going to work. So we needed to develop a data collection tool, a kind of a survey tool, because we had to conduct the survey in the country, in the six geopolitical zones. So we selected one state per geopolitical zone. Remember, this is at the heat of COVID-19 in 2020, you know. And so we began the process in January 2020, and you know that the first case of COVID came into the country. That was about February 2020. So we were not deterred by the COVID situation. Yes, we took all the necessary precaution, but then we went ahead to conduct this survey in one state per geopolitical zone in the country. That's six states. Yeah, amongst the states in the country. So the survey tool kind of captures data of the kind of diagnostics that are available in country, because we want to develop a document that speaks to our country, not generic and we're not able to implement. So we got data from primary healthcare sector, private sector, government facilities, and of course, facilities without laboratory, facilities with laboratories, and facilities that are standalone, you know, that are not within the hospital, and some other facilities are within the hospitals. So the sample coverage was kind of broad in order to be able to, you know, have a kind of understanding of what is available at each level of care. Of course, vis-a-vis the ideal. So we had that the data was collated, analyzed, and a report generated. So this was submitted to the consultant, gathered all these evidences and, you know, wrote a report and submitted to the National Laboratory Technical Working Group, review the first draft of the essential diagnostic list that was developed by the consultant. And then following that, the wider stakeholders engagement was done in order to be able to review it. So yes, the essential diagnostic list, just like I said, is evidence-based, and it's not intended to be, prescriptive, with respect to IVDs and the levels at which they can be used. So it is based on national and local burden of diseases, unmet needs, and available resources and priorities. So that's some of the rationale that guided the development of the essential diagnostic list. Yeah. So the draft was validated and, of course, endorsed by the Honorable Minister of Health. That was July 2021.
Great. And so just let me take a step back. I also want to clarify something that, so in essence, the essential diagnostic list, as you mentioned, yes. And I think you made a very deep point that it's not meant to be prescriptive. So the essential diagnostic list is not an identifier that says you can use device A versus device B, but it's basically meant to say that in an ideal setting or the ideal objective of the country is to have test A or test B available to somebody, right? As opposed to saying you're not picking company A versus company B as a product. What you're picking is the type of diagnostic that the facility would have available to the population. Is that the correct way of saying it?
Exactly. Exactly.
Good. And so let's talk about the challenges of doing this. So obviously there was the COVID period and all the rest, but from a discussion perspective, just take us into that a little bit. So what would have been some of the more contentious issues? Is there a question of concerns about when you're doing the data gathering and saying, okay, our facilities cover 60% of what we thought or 80% of what we thought, but we really need to get that extra 20% on there? What types of discussions were a bit more challenging to have during the discussion and the lead up to the finalization?
Some of the challenges, of course, one of them was the COVID situation.
Of course.
And travel restrictions and all of that. And at times how to get waiver and ensure that people are able to travel to conduct the survey. At a point in time, some of the surveyors could not actually travel. So where we are supposed to have like three or four surveyors. So one of them didn't show up and we had to give a go ahead that, okay, three of you should go ahead with the work. We have to get this done. And those are some of the situations. And of course, there was quite a lot of discussions around sample coverage in a country that's 36 plus one state, mm-hmm. and your coverage was 6 plus 1, mm-hmm. because we had to do a pilot first in Abuja before we now went ahead to do the survey at other 6 states. So there was discussions around that, but the thing was that we look at the situation of a country and we realized that even if you visit the over 30 states, you are either visiting a primary healthcare facility, secondary healthcare, tertiary healthcare facility, private facilities, standalone, or private facilities in an hospital, in a standalone hospital also. So the sample size is not just based on the country coverage. It's actually based on covering the provisions of the health system, the tiers of the healthcare delivery in the country. And that was factored into all that we did. And so we're able to actually make a way forward from that kind of discussion. Another thing that was a major challenge then was insecurity in some parts of the country. There are some countries you could not access because of the insecurity challenges. So you have to make alternative decision and make another choice of another state to visit. Then reluctance by some health workers during the course of administering the tool, it's a survey and it's a bit bulky. So asking long questions for people that have to work and all of that. So when you now tell them that you make them understand the importance of this, is then you have some kind of a buy-in from the workers and they give you the information just as you require. And then, of course, access of some assay techniques and specimen types, you know, in the survey tool. So we realized that, you know, the survey tool that was developed, there are some specimen types and some, you know, techniques that are not captured, but they're still available in some primary healthcare centers. You know, they are not modern, okay, but then they are producing results, you know, and their quality checks and the methods are validated, but then they are not in the tool. So all of that, you know, we'll get a call from the feed that, oh, these are not in the tool, but then they are available. So for those kind of techniques, we tell them and write it in the survey tool. We'll pick it up during the process of analyzing the data from the survey. So you know, because of the COVID situation also, there was kind of a notification challenges. So facilities didn't get to know that that survey will happen until surveyors got there because of communication gap, you know, at some levels of authority. You know, you had sent information much earlier, but then it was not disseminated to the right quarter. So all of those are some of the challenges. And but then, by and large, we were able to overcome all the challenges. And another major challenge is a lot of time was taken on stakeholders' engagements, management in the process of bringing all of, you know, to bringing all to agree on the list. Sure. Because in the use of the list, you know, it's not just for the government use or office use alone. You know, it has to get to the end users. And start to bring the end users on board in order to be able to, you know, speak to, bring physicians, bring several other people, you know, professionals that are relevant to in vitro diagnostics, you know, even the vendors and all of that. We're part of the process to ensure that we're able to proceed with the validation of the document.
So Adamo, let's pick up on that point. So I'm curious about the engagement of the private sector in the exercise. So both from a private lab perspective. So I can easily see how, you know, a government facility, government hospital, government lab would easily be supportive of an exercise because they're, you know, it's technically they're public taxpayers payments essentially. Yeah. But from a private lab, did you find that there was good engagement? Did you find that was a bit challenging? How did that turn around? And then how did the IVD companies approach this with you?
For based on our own experience, the private facilities that that were engaged were even more enthusiastic about the idea because they feel it's an opportunity for them. You know, when this list is available, they know what kind of services to make available in the country, and so they were very open, you know, to give us information. The only challenge is that when you start asking questions that relate to maybe operational issues that may kind of breach some facility confidentiality and all of that. So, but we didn't have so much of that kind of experience. So they were very open to engaging with us, you know, in the private sector.
Great. Okay. And from the IVD side, did you was it directly with manufacturers or was it through the distributors? How was that engagement taking place?
Yeah, for the IVD manufacturers, we have representatives of these manufacturers in country. Whether there's a limited capacity, so to say, as regards to manufacturing of IVDs in the country, but we have representatives of several IVD companies in the country that we engage with, and of course brought them also to stakeholders engagement meetings in order to be able to understand how this speaks to them and how this speaks to whatever kind of diagnosis they are making available for the country. So the engagement was majorly with distributors, not directly with the company.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. And I think that's hopefully also going to be some good information to share with other colleagues from other countries looking at getting their EDL process underway. I know there's a lot of efforts at the global level to try to promote this within the country. So I think this would be a good way to help them understand the types of challenges and things to prepare for. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Adamola, I'd like to just get some more advice from you. So You've taken a path of entering the med lab field from an academic perspective, starting it at the bench and involved, and then making the shift to essentially supporting the system from the outside and kind of supporting the management of the system from the outside and strengthening it. So for early careerists and students that are considering taking that kind of path as well, would you have some advice for them of some areas they should focus on? You know, you had mentioned kind of writing policy and guidance documents is not something that you learn very much in the med lab program. So just any other type of advice you'd have for other people who are interested in following your path, where they're interested in participating in the system, but perhaps not at the bench level.
Yeah. One advice I'll give is if you have an interest in development work relating to medical laboratories, intervention and all of that. One key thing I must do is, start building yourself in the aspect of stakeholders engagement, in the aspect of reading documents relating to development work as relates to laboratory. The kind of document to actually look into very well would be the laboratory service policy, not just for Nigeria, but for several other countries. Because the idea is a global idea. It's not just an in-country idea. Yes, you start in-country, to build relevance and all of that. But it's a global idea. If you're able to make impact within your space, within your country, and then as time goes on, your relevance will start speaking to several other things that is happening in several other countries. So the idea is read guidance documents that has to do with laboratory, read the policy. When you look at the medical laboratory service policy, now you see 21 thematic areas. And that's speaking to several aspects of the laboratory sector. So for a professional or a student that is interested in development works relating to laboratory, you need to get yourself familiar with some of this. And of course, mentorship is also very key. I've benefited in relating with quite a number of industry champions, different people within the medical laboratory service, from academia to development work to several other aspects of the laboratory practice. And this kind of interaction gets you, creative to know what to influence within your space. So one thing is flair for it. And then nothing is impossible. The fact that you're not within that space now does not mean you can't get in there. You need to build your career in such a way that the kind of trainings you attend, the kind of exposure you have, the kind of online courses you attend is speaking to laboratory practice, not as a bench scientist now, but as a program scientist. So it's not like when you're a bench scientist, you become a bad program scientist, or when you're a program scientist, you become you can be excellent in both. So, but you need to understand the kind of transition you want to make. For me, it was easy for me to transit from bench, to administrative or policy side of the medical laboratory service practice or program side, because I'd seen myself not spending so long a time on the bench. I told myself the maximum number of time you'll spend on the bench is 2 years. Eventually, I spent like 4 years on the bench. It added value because my experience on the bench is one of those things that are helping me, in a lot of interventions that is ongoing within the laboratory practice, laboratory service interventions in Nigeria today. So it is a whole lot of deliberate efforts. There must be some kind of intentionality into it. So the courses you attend, there are a lot of free courses online that you can access that speaks to public aspects, laboratory practice aspect of the public health. So when you are doing that, yes, you may not study public health, but then with all these short courses, you start getting ideas and all of those things that you have to do. One other key thing that you must pay attention to is monitoring and evaluation, data handling, data analysis, and that's very key, because once you're able to speak to data, once you're able to, because there are a lot of data that are being generated within laboratory service in the country, practice and all of that, that are not being spoken to, that are not being well coordinated and all of that. So when you begin to have a very hands-on experience with data handling, data analysis, data visualization, and of course, speaking to data, you realize that you start making relevance within this programmatic aspect of medical laboratory service practice. And so these are some of the ideas that I will give to upcoming graduates. These are things that you don't possibly learn from school, but there are courses available online. You know, I've attended a public health diploma online before. You know, and these are not courses that are paid for. They are free to access. You know, all you just need is to make Google your friend, type whatever you want, access it, read, you know, and spend time with it before you know it. And of course, the guidance of mentors and people in the field, you know, you'll be able to make great level of progress.
That's great advice. Thank you, Ademola. So just a final word here is I'd like to ask, we ask our guests specifically if they'd like to acknowledge any mentors or people who provided them support along the way. I'd like to do the same for yourself. So please take it away. Anybody you'd like to recognize?
Okay, awesome. When I got the public service job, you know, it was a transition for me from the private sector to the public sector. I was a little bit confused. Because yes, you know, I was actually looking forward to do a lot of things within the private sector, but then the public sector calls and I place a call across to one of my mentors. His name is Dr. Abiodun Laya Paul. He's now with WHO Ghana. And he told me, this is a place of influence. This is a place of impact. Embrace it. So I listened to that advice and I was ready to move. So I moved from Lagos to Abuja and then, today it's all become an history because yes, it's a lot of gap. And if you know what you're doing, it's a place to actually make a lot of impact. So that's one person. Another person was my doctor when I joined the public sector. That is Mrs. Nkechi Nwoke. You know, she tutored me in such a way that, you know, even though I didn't have a kind of undergraduate or master's level experience with this kind of intervention, with this kind of approach, you know, administrative and policy aspects of laboratory medicine. She took me through the entire process, you know, stayed with her, told me how to write more, taught me how to, you know, write position papers, how to write a minister's speech and all of that. And before you know it, in a space of 2 to 3 years, I became so efficient in all of these, and it actually paved way for me within the Federal Ministry of Health. Another person I would like to acknowledge, of course, is my professor at the University of Lagos, as Professor Oluyemi Akinloye. You know, he's a mentor of notes, and you know, he has a robust experience in clinical chemistry and molecular diagnosis. And of course, I've also met him at several other platforms. So yes, these are some of the few, you know, high level mentors that I have. I miss several others.
Great. I'm sure there are many others actually, Ademola, but thank you for sharing those as well. And thank you for sharing your time with us today and giving us some insights into your experiences and hopefully something that'll inspire some others who are interested in these areas. Certainly, the more people we can get who appreciate the types of areas you're working on and can contribute in this space, certainly that's going to have a major impact on the systems going forward in the years to come. So I think it's a great demonstration of what can happen. So thank you very much for your time today and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.